Nobody likes waiting rooms. Whether in the office of a doctor, a dentist, a lawyer, a hospital, most people have a similar distaste for waiting rooms. They all have those chairs in which it is impossible to get comfortable, at least not for any length of time. Televisions are mounted high, forcing you to strain your neck to look at them, with the volume set too low and a channel set on something you probably don't care about anyway. There's always magazines you can read, usually from about 18 months ago. The list goes on and on. But even worse than the predictable surroundings of a waiting room is the actual waiting itself, because nobody likes to wait. And Christians are no different. It's like the believer who prayed, "Lord, give me patience and give it to me right now." We know the positive benefits of this virtue, but we don't wish to go through the necessary steps in order to obtain it. So sometimes we find ourselves in circumstances that force us to wait. Rick Yon has written an excellent book entitled God's Waiting Room, in which he writes, "God's waiting room is a state which is involuntary, helpless to determine its outcome, highly stressful, perplexing, a place of realizing personal inadequacy, and a place where God will gradually unfold the next chapter of our lives." Now, I can think of several characters in the Bible who found themselves in God's waiting room. Consider Moses. Moses had to live 40 years after he left Egypt before he went back to lead the people out of slavery. David was anointed king over Israel as a very young man, probably a teenager, but he had to wait years before he actually got to the throne. Job waited an undisclosed amount of time in misery before his situation was rectified. In the New Testament, Paul spent 11 years in the Arabian desert after his conversion before he ever went out to minister. Now, sometimes those who are in God's waiting room essentially put themselves there. I mentioned Moses, who had to spend 40 years in Midian. He had to go there because he had killed an Egyptian taskmaster. He was running for his life. And there are times when that happens. We put ourselves in that situation. It doesn't make it any less painful. But there are other times when we find ourselves in that kind of situation. We feel that we're in a holding pattern. We're in a waiting room, not because of anything we've done. It may have been what somebody else has done. Or it may just be the circumstances of our lives. It may be that God is working in another direction, and we will wait until He is done before our life moves on. Remember when He told Abraham, "I will give you every place that you step your foot, but not for 400 years because the sin of the Amorites is not yet full." Abraham had to wait. In fact, it was many generations after he was gone that his family found the promise that God had given. And that wasn't his fault. God was simply at work in others' lives at that time. And we should not always equate this idea of waiting, sometimes coupled with painful affliction, as signs of God's displeasure or punishment. Sometimes this happens so that we will become more fruitful. Jesus said, "You're like branches of a vine." And if you know anything about grapevines, the way you get them to produce more grapes is you have to cut them back, you have to prune them. And that cutting away can be painful, but it's necessary. Of those examples that I mentioned above, David, Job, Paul, they had done nothing themselves to merit this time in God's waiting room, and yet they were there. And we can learn from their examples. And sometimes we find ourselves in that state of affliction because of the actions of others. Remember when you're in school? Maybe there was a substitute teacher who didn't know who was who. You know, she might have had the seating chart, but of course everybody sat in a different place that day, right? And maybe while she's turned her back to the class writing on the board, you know, somebody says something, does something, you know, throws a paper, whatever. She turns around and says, "Who did that?" Well, no one's going to admit it. So the whole class gets punished. You remember that? So that's not fair. I didn't do anything. Well, that happens. And that happens in life sometimes too. Sometimes we are put in a situation because other people around us make decisions. That passage that I'd read earlier from Lamentations. Jeremiah found himself caught up in the destruction of his city. Not because of what he had done. He had been faithful. He had done exactly what God had told him to do, but because of the people around him, he got caught up in the affliction of everybody else. And it was a very painful time. It was a very difficult time. Somebody else that fits into that category is the man we've been studying over these last few weeks. And that is the Old Testament character of Caleb. Caleb, as we have seen, is a man of courage. He had courage to overcome his ancestry because people were prejudiced against him. There wasn't anything he could do about it. We saw last week he had courage in the face of adversity. He was one of 12 spies who went in to spy out the land of Canaan. They all came back with the facts. It's a great land. It's a land of plenty. But it's also a land of opposition. The enemy is there, and they're pretty strong. All 12 agreed on those two items. 10 of the 12 said, "We can't do it. Might as well go back to Egypt because there's no way we can conquer this land." Caleb and Joshua said, "No way. Yeah, there's giants in the land, but we've got a greater God. And if God wants us to have this land, and He said He does, we can do this. Let's go." But the people of Israel accepted the 10, not the 2. And God said, "Fine. You say we can't do it, you won't do it. You say it can't happen, it won't happen. Not a one of you that is alive today are going to step foot in the promised land, except Joshua and Caleb. They had faith. They believed, I'm going to bring them into the land. All the rest of you are going to die. You're going to die in the wilderness. You're never going to step foot in what I promised to give you." Okay. Seems fair enough. Problem is, God did not just wipe out everybody but Joshua and Caleb right then. He had them wander around in the wilderness for about 40 years until they all died off except for Caleb and Joshua and their families. Now, of course, other children were born during that time and a new generation rose up. So there was a whole generation of people that went in. But Joshua and Caleb had to wait about 40 years in order to get the promise. And this was not 40 years of pleasant experience. They were doing laps around the Sinai Peninsula. If you know anything about geography, there isn't anything in the Sinai Peninsula but dirt. And it was difficult. There were times they didn't know where they were going to get water. There were times when it was oppressive. And can you imagine Joshua and Caleb looking at each other and saying, "Oh man, could you imagine? We could be there already. It should have taken 11 days to go from Egypt to Canaan. It took 38 years. And Caleb and Joshua had to wait. They had to wait for that entire generation to die off. You see, failure to engage the enemy at the time of God's choosing, that results in a return back to where we were. And even Moses was not immune from God's judgment when the people failed to place their trust in God. Moses himself didn't even get into the promised land. But we have Caleb. We have his example. And that should constantly be before our eyes. And we're told in this passage about Caleb, he wholeheartedly followed the Lord. And we're going to see that that's the key. And having that kind of courage in spite of our affliction. In spite of those times of waiting when we wonder, God, are you even doing anything? Don't you realize the difficulty that I'm in? Don't you care? Caleb shows us how we can have the courage to overcome those times. You see, all of Caleb's contemporaries were dying off. And it took 38 years in the wilderness for that to happen. Just think about Caleb. Every day he's looking through the obituaries, seeing more and more of his generation die off. Probably sometimes wondering, all right, how long is this going to take? It would be natural to feel that way. And I'm sure that Caleb had those feelings. But he didn't let those feelings weigh him down. He maintained his faith. He maintained his courage. I would say he maintained his sanity through that wholehearted following after the Lord. And I'd like to look briefly today at three things about that that we can learn from. When we find ourselves in God's waiting room, when we find ourselves in those times, and affliction can come in many ways. It can be physical. We can be going through an illness. We can be recovering from an injury or a surgery. It can be a chronic illness that maybe can't be fixed with surgery, but it's something you have to endure. Affliction doesn't have to be physical. It can be financial. We've heard today how people have lost jobs. People are having trouble finding jobs. This is a tough economy. People are in danger of losing their homes. People who retired and thought they were in good shape find that maybe they weren't in as good a shape as they thought they were. And they're not sure where they're going to be in another 6 months or a year. Affliction can be emotional and psychological. There's a lot of different ways in which we can go through difficult times. But I believe that these three elements of Caleb's life will help us get through. The first aspect of Caleb's courage in the face of affliction was his focus. We have to maintain our focus if we're going to survive the difficult days in God's waiting room. To use a modern phrase, we got to keep our eye on the ball. I remember when I was in Little League, our catcher smashed his thumb in a car door and couldn't play for a while. And I don't know how they ever stuck me back there, but I ended up being the catcher. If you've ever seen, you know, catcher in baseball, they've got all that equipment on. I think that equipment weighed more than I did. I mean, it was all I could do not to just fall over. But I had a real problem being a catcher. And that is that every time that the man at bat swung his bat, I closed my eyes. It was just, I couldn't help it. I closed my eyes. Now what happens when you close your eyes? You can't see the ball. And it would go by me or hit me in the mask or whatever. I didn't last at catcher very long. I had a hard time keeping my eye on the ball. It's also important for a hitter. If you go up there and take your eye off the ball, if you ever do hit the ball, it'll be by pure coincidence. And the coach will tell you, keep your eye on the ball. Some of you might be football fans. Have you ever seen a wide receiver who starts to run before he catches the ball? Usually results in an incomplete pass. Because he hasn't watched it all the way in. We got to keep our eye on the ball. And that's the whole point of focus. We read in 2 Chronicles 16:9. I like the way the King James Version renders this. For the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show Himself strong in the behalf of those whose heart is perfect toward Him. Now that word that speaks of perfect, it does not mean without any fault at all. It doesn't mean sinless perfection. It means whole. We talk about loving someone with your whole heart or being wholeheartedly devoted. That's the idea here. And in the Bible, a whole heart is contrasted with a divided heart. James talks about a double-minded man, someone who doesn't have their focus. They're distracted. They get distracted by other things and they lose sight of what's important. James describes that kind of man as unstable in all his ways. And it's easy to lose our focus when we're in the midst of affliction. It's easy to lose our focus on God and we start looking at ourselves or we start looking at our circumstances. Think about Peter that night when they're out on the boat and a storm starts to blow up. And these guys are professional fishermen. They usually know how to handle it, but this is a bad storm. All of a sudden they look out and here's a figure walking toward them in the middle of the lake. First they thought it was a ghost. Peter looked a little closer and said, no, that's Jesus. He says, Lord, if that's you, let me come out with you. And Jesus said, come on out, Peter. And Peter stepped out of the boat, started walking on the water. But what happened? At one point, he lost his focus. At one point, he took his eyes off of Jesus. He started looking at the waves. He started hearing the wind. He might have looked at himself and said, what are you doing here? And immediately he began to sink. He lost his focus. But Caleb was a man who never lost his focus. He continued with that wholehearted devotion. He didn't worry about his circumstances. He didn't go to God and say, okay, Lord, it's been 15 years, 22 years, 36 years. When's this going to happen? He didn't focus on any of those things. He kept his focus on God. And that's something we must do. When we get distracted by our circumstances, when we become filled with doubt, we need to develop what's called a God focus on life. We need to keep our eyes on Him. We need to keep asking ourselves, what is God doing through this circumstance? The author of Hebrews encourages his readers to do just that in Hebrews chapter 12. Beginning in verse 1, therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before Him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. The author of Hebrews is saying, stay focused. Fix your eyes on Jesus, just like a runner in a race fixes his eyes on the finish line. Maybe you've seen this happen, where runners are running in a race, and the guy is in the lead. He's ahead, but he turns his head to see how close the guys are behind him. What happens? Sometimes he trips and falls right on his face. Other times, in turning, he breaks stride. And if somebody is real close, they can overtake him. Don't worry about what everybody else is doing. You keep your eye on the goal. Focus. Keep your eye forward. And you see that Jesus did just that. He describes Jesus as someone who kept his eye on the goal. Why could Jesus go through all that he did? The betrayal, the beatings, the abuse, and finally the crucifixion, which was the most agonizing way to die. How could he do that? It's because he kept his focus on the end. For the joy set before him, he knew what would result, so he was able to go through what he had to suffer. Another example of this is Paul. He writes in Philippians 3, verses 12 through 14, not that I've already obtained all this or have already been made perfect, but I press on to take hold of that for which Christ Jesus took hold of me. Brothers, I do not consider myself yet to have taken hold of it, but one thing I do, forgetting what is behind and straining toward what is ahead, I press on to the goal, to win the prize for which God has called me heavenward in Christ Jesus. Same image of a runner in a race. Forget about what's behind you. That's only going to trip you up. Don't even worry about what's going on around you. You keep your eyes focused straight ahead. Keep your eye on the prize. And that'll help us get through those difficult days. The second component to Caleb's courage was his faith. Now, we saw last week the tremendous amount of faith that Caleb had. He and Joshua, they saw the fortified cities. They saw the giants in the land. They knew it was going to be difficult, but they saw God. They knew that God was greater than the opposition. They knew that God would bring them through. They had faith. And we've got to be careful not to lose our faith in times of affliction. That book I mentioned earlier, God's Waiting Room, that author writes, some people are so problem-oriented that they never see the potential in the problem. Everything looks like doom and gloom. They center their attention on everything that's going wrong and fail to see all the aspects of life that are going right. God is a realist. He sees the problems, but he also knows the solutions to those problems. He wants us to gain his perspective on all those issues we call problems or impossibilities. With God, nothing is impossible, so our perspective must be positive instead of negative. And Caleb certainly maintained a positive perspective throughout his life. I'm not sure I could have done that, being in his circumstance, but he did. And we're going to see in a couple of weeks, toward the end of his life, even as an old man, he still had that fire. He still was just as positive then as he was when he came back with the spies that God was going to come through. He was able to maintain that faith. In Joshua 14, which we're going to look at in a couple of weeks, Caleb recounts all that God has done. And instead of bemoaning, oh man, it's been so long. Been out in this desert for 38 years. Now he's focusing on the good things God has done and what God is going to do. Caleb had faith in the promises of God, and those promises sustained him through difficult times because he knew that God's promises were sure. He knew that maybe it wasn't now, but it was going to happen. And that's exactly what faith is all about. Remember how the Bible defines faith in Hebrews 11:1? Faith is being sure of what we hope for. Certain of what we don't see. See, we may not see it right now. We may not have it in our hands at the moment, but we know it's going to happen. We know God is going to bring us through. That's what faith is all about. And then finally, Caleb's courage demanded fidelity. Caleb stayed true to God throughout the long years of wandering. Regardless of the circumstances, Caleb remained faithful. God commends Caleb in Numbers 14:24, "Because my servant Caleb has a different spirit and follows me wholeheartedly, I will bring him into the land he went into, and his descendants will inherit it." Literally, Caleb is said to have filled himself completely after the Lord. It's that single-minded dedication, and that's a necessary ingredient for the kind of courage it takes to stand in affliction. Paul demonstrates the same kind of fidelity. He writes in Romans 1:9, "God, whom I serve with my whole heart in preaching the gospel of His Son." See, this isn't just some added extra. This is something that is all-consuming. Paul later writes to those same Romans, "But thanks be to God that though you used to be slaves to sin, you wholeheartedly obeyed the form of teaching to which you were entrusted." He could write to the Ephesians, "Serve wholeheartedly as if you were serving the Lord and not men." And then the author of Hebrews adds, in Hebrews 6, verses 11 and 12, "We want each of you to show this same diligence to the very end in order to make your hope sure. We don't want you to become lazy, but to imitate those who through faith and patience inherit what's been promised." See, this progress demands diligent effort. Now, it's true, God carries us along to maturity, but it's also true that we are called to do our part. We're not to be lazy. We need to apply ourselves to the spiritual resources God has given us. We have the promises from God in His Word. We need to exercise that faith and that faithfulness that will get us through. Just like Caleb and Joshua, we must believe in His promise. Even when the circumstances don't seem to lend themselves that way, we know God has said He will bring us through. Our faith requires faithfulness to last through those difficult days in God's waiting room. In fact, if you go back in the Hebrew language, there is no distinction between one's faith and one's faithfulness. If you want to know if somebody has faith, see if they're faithful. There was no difference. Paul says in Galatians 6:9, "Let us not become weary in doing good, for at the proper time we will reap a harvest." Notice the last phrase, "if we do not give up." The problem is sometimes people give up before the promise comes. So if we find ourselves in a difficult situation, if we find ourselves in God's waiting room, we're waiting around for God to move in our lives. Take the example of Caleb. Keep your focus on God. Keep your faith in God. And stay faithful to God. It'll get us through those dark times. Even when those difficulties aren't our fault, He will bring us through. He will bring us through those times of affliction.